Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 198 of HER, the podcast where you'll hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her clutter. Yeah, I know. Start cleaning it up, girlfriends. Look, we have a terrific show coming up. Before we begin, just know that this episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's your first official reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show. We always look forward to hearing from you and, you know, kind of scoping out your feedback. Love to hear from you. So make sure to run over to iTunes after the episode. Want to hear from you. All right. It's time for HER.
HER, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life. It's all about HER.
Oh my gosh. Just raise your hand if you've tried to declutter the mess you live in and work in. That's just about everyone out there. I mean, this is ridiculous. The United States has a clutter problem. So much so, storage is a $154 billion industry. That was a B. And only 25% of us can park our cars in that nice little two-car garage. Why? For lack of space. In fact, studies show we could save ourselves 60 minutes per day just by being more organized, and our stress levels, that means cortisol, that stress hormone levels, would plummet after a thorough decluttering. So how come we're not like doing this declutter thing? Our expert today is Tracy McCubbin. She's the author of new book, Making Space Clutter Free, the last book on decluttering you'll ever need. Now, Tracy is not only the author of this book, but she's always referred to herself as OCD, obsessive, compulsive, and delightful. And who knew she could turn that trait into a booming business? Yeah, so she's been basically involved in television and multimedia for quite some time, really helping all of us learn how to be able to attack this one thing that seems to drive us all nuts. Tracy, welcome to the HER podcast.
Thanks, Dr. Peek. I'm so happy to be here.
How'd you get involved with decluttering in the first place?
So it's super interesting. I was a personal assistant for a long time. And when you're a personal assistant, your job is to solve problems. So I would get referred out. Friends of the person I was working for would say, I've got this big mess to deal with. My business, you know, went under. I'm dealing with all this paperwork. I can't dig myself out. My mom died. So I started to get these little jobs, and I just had a knack for it. And one of the parts of the equation is I'm the child of a hoarder. So I grew up watching a family member struggle with their relationship with stuff. I just constantly saw the toll that the mess was taking on them. So I was able to take my experience being, you know, born organized. It's a gift and a curse sometimes, and apply it to other people because I had such an empathy for how difficult it is for some people to sort through the clutter, that it's more than just, you know, do it, just more than, you know, throw it away. There's just a block for so many people. And because of my years of experience and what I'd seen with my father, I was able to apply it to other people. So out of that, I started helping people, and I pretty quickly a business was born. So I've been in business for 12 years now, and I have a couple thousand clients under my belt. So I have seen every mess that there is.
All right. So that's a good thing to know. You know, it's interesting. I'm thinking that the series Hoarders on cable network, I'm sure that has motivated a whole lot of people to clean up, because it's just, that has got to be the hardest thing to watch. I mean, it is just truly heartbreaking. It's absolutely heartbreaking.
And here's one thing that I want people to understand, that there is hoarding, and that is an actual psychological disorder. It's, you know, it's akin to alcoholism or agoraphobia. It's a very, very serious thing and not to be taken lightly. So there's a big difference between someone who has a hoarding disorder and those of us who are dealing with rampant clutter. And so a lot of times people will say, like, oh, I'm such a hoarder today. And it's like, well, no, that's a very, very serious thing that needs to be dealt with in a different way. And what I'm talking about are those of us that just have too much stuff, not enough time. We don't understand why we want to let go. We don't understand why we can't. So I just like to make that distinction from the beginning.
Yeah, I think that that's very important. But I will tell you that as sad and as tragic as hoarders, you know, really is, you know, on television and in reality, it really, I think, motivated a lot of people to kind of sit down and really look at their own life, you know, and like, what's that
about?
Oh,
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You know? Absolutely. And I think that it, yeah. And I think for a lot of people, you know, I get a lot of calls and they're like, okay, I realize, you know, I'm not in that situation. So maybe if I make some changes in my buying habits or if I can let go of some stuff, I can really turn this ship around. So I think it was very illuminating for people. But I agree with you 100%.
All right. Now, let's go through what you call the 7 emotional clutter blocks and how to conquer them. All right. Let's rock and roll. Let's do it.
Okay, fantastic. So this is after years of experience and working with clients and seeing them, the same things pop up, you know, this everyone kind of hitting up against the same issues. I was like, wow, there's really something here. So for instance, a big one for so many people is what I like to call my fantasy stuff or my fantasy life, right? That I'm buying, you know, for instance, I see this around sports all the time. Everyone's like, I'm going to take up skiing. And so they go out and they buy all the stuff for skiing. You know, they buy the gloves and the boots and the hat and the whole thing, and then they never go skiing. And then it takes up a huge chunk of their garage because they're like, well, someday I might ski. I always wanted to be a skier. I sort of envisioned myself a skier. So it's about being honest about the life that you're living now.
Okay. All right. So just keep going through the clutter blocks.
Okay, great. Fantastic. So, you know, another one is other people's stuff, right? Stuff, this is a really big one. It sort of touches on our both sentimentality and guilt, right? It's the idea of stuff that other people have left for us. So it's your grandmother's stuff or your great grandmother's stuff, and you feel incredibly attached to it because it reminds you of them, but you don't really have a place for it. You know, I see garages all the time that are full of old furniture that's completely out of date and is, you know, you're never going to use it in your house. And you're like, well, I can't get rid of it because it was my great grandmother's, or, you know, or I feel guilty letting it go. She would be so mad at me, you know. And I had a conversation with a client recently about this idea that, you know, here's this giant bowl that came from your great grandmother in Ireland. You know, you don't like it. You're not going to put it out. It takes up a huge cupboard. Like, would your great grandmother be mad at you if you let it go? Or would she be upset that you're not utilizing your home in the same way?
All right.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
Well, it makes all the sense in the world. How do you distinguish yourself from someone like Marie Kondo?
Look, Marie is fantastic, and she started this amazing conversation. I mean, she has opened the door to the idea of decluttering, and it's absolutely fantastic. But for a lot of us, that one sort of question, does it spark joy, isn't enough. It's like they can't, well, I don't know. Does it? I mean, maybe I don't like it, but it was my grandmother's, but it makes me feel guilty if I let it go, or I paid a lot of money for it, or there's just a deeper block that one question doesn't answer for so many of my clients. And I also think in this country, we're dealing, it's never been easier to shop. You can go on Amazon and you can shop your little heart out and it'll show up tomorrow. You don't even have to leave your house. So we are being inundated with stuff, cheap consumer goods. It's just this, incredible pressure to buy, buy, buy. And I think that that is really adding to it. I saw a statistic the other day that said, I think we have, the United States has 3% of the world's children, and we buy 40% of the world's toys manufactured. So there's this really deep, like, disconnect between how much stuff we're bringing in. And I think for that Marie Kondo's method, it's a bit oversimplified for a lot of us. Some of us it works fantastic for, but for a lot of people, it just doesn't quite get there. And that's what I want to look at, is the, you know, the deeper underlying emotions. Like, another clutter block that I talk about is, you know, not feeling worthy for your nice stuff. I don't use my nice stuff. It's too nice for me, or I'm saving it for a special occasion, or, you know, it's like, why isn't today the special occasion? You know, why aren't you wearing that scarf that you think is so beautiful? What are you saving it for? I see that all the time with china. People are like, I can't use that china. It's too nice. It's like, well, then what function does it serve? Why not eat, you know, why not eat that piece of pizza on a beautiful piece of china? And so I think that there's a deeper underlying thing, and especially in this country, of why we're so attached.
Very, very interesting. You know, this whole thing about when you mentioned the Marie Kondo difference, I struggled with that as well. This whole issue of, does it give you joy, particularly? Sometimes that's really hard to answer. I mean, I could certainly understand that if you fit into a really cool outfit, or, you know, something that immediately just lights you up and there's just, you know, an amazing amount of happiness about it. But other things are a little harder. You know, you look at, you know, a couple of bookends that are amazing that you got in a kind of a semi-antique shop somewhere a long time ago associated with a particular event. But now you barely use them. All right, how do you do the joy thing with them? It's a little difficult. It's more like, I think the word isn't so much joy. I think it's enjoy. Are you enjoying?
Yeah, exactly. You know? Right, but also that opens the door. The conversation I have a lot is, look, I think our home at the end of the day is a tool. Right? It's a place that gives us shelter. It's a place that gives us safety. Yes, it should be beautiful to us. You should walk in and be thrilled about it, but it is ultimately a tool. So sometimes the items that we're looking at are very functional. It's like, I use this example all the time, like screwdrivers. Like, you need a Phillips head and you need a flathead screwdriver. Do they spark joy? I guess when I got to screw something, but, you know, otherwise this is a tool that I need. And so I think for a lot of my clients that I've seen, you know, being in so many people's homes, that there's a struggle that just that one question doesn't quite answer. So what I'm trying to provide is, for those of us that can't get there with that one question, a deeper look at what is it? Look, I believe that stuff comes to us with no meaning, right? Just, you buy something, it has no meaning, and we imbue all the meaning on it. So we are the ones that make the stuff so important. So in that same way, you can make it unimportant. You can take the meaning away.
You know, I wonder as you get older, certainly, you know, 50 plus, when you realize that for the first time maybe in your life, that you do have a limited time on this planet. Before that, we all seem to think we're immortal for some interesting reason or the other. But what's interesting here is that, you know, when you hold on to things like, you know, that fine china, the crystal, whatever, and you're saying for that special occasion, which may or may not ever occur, you know, maybe understanding one's mortality makes it imbues it with different kind of meaning. Like, wait a minute, why am I only waiting on this so that someone else can enjoy it? You know, with me, why can't I just gift myself with some time with that particular possession, whether it's, you know, just pouring yourself a glass of wine in a really fine crystal, you know, a glass that you own and enjoying that sitting out there, you know, on your patio and back and forth, because that's all about you. But I think that,
right.
You know, I think that it's also kind of an age thing too, to a certain degree. I guess when you salt and pepper it with a little bit of mortality in there, things kind of change a little bit. Let's go on to some more clutter blocks, because I really think that this is important.
Absolutely. So, absolutely. You know, another fantastic one is sort of the idea of like, I couldn't possibly let go of that. I spent so much money on it. Right. I mean, that one we hit up all the time. The joke I always make is I see from clients is, I couldn't possibly get rid of that. You know, I'll walk into their master bedroom and they'll have a giant treadmill in the middle of their bedroom. And I'll say, well, do you use this? And they go, oh, I use it every day to hang my clothes on. You know, and I'm like, okay, well, you're not using it as a treadmill, so let's get rid of it. Oh, I can't. That was so expensive. I paid, you know, $3,000, $5,000 for it. And so sometimes we get really locked around this idea of what we've spent on things. And, you know, I say to people, like, look, sometimes you just have to put your big girl pants on and you have to accept that you overpaid for something and you just learn from it. You know, you just go like, all right, this was expensive. And I tell this story in my book about these pair of pants that I bought, and they were ridiculously expensive. And I wore them once and the whole thing. And I hung on to them for years and years and years and years. And finally I was like, you know what? I got to let go of these. Like, I'm not going to wear them. They just make me feel bad about myself. I feel bad I spent the money. I felt bad I can't fit into them. And I donated them to an organization that works with getting homeless teens off the street. And like, I live around the corner from it. And like a month later, I saw some young girl in my pants because I knew them. They were very specific. And then I, you know, went on to learn to find that she'd been sex trafficked since she was 10 years old. And she was finally, you know, had a job and was getting her GED. And I was like, you know what? I made a mistake, but I was able to help somebody. You know, I was able to.
Well, you literally invested in her. Which was kind of an interesting way of looking at it. But, you know, the I paid too much for this thing to let it go is a very common clutter block. No question. All right. Let's do another one.
100. Okay. Absolutely.
We're hungry for this stuff. Come on. We're gobbling this up here.
I know. This is fantastic. So I'm going down my list. You know, another fantastic one is sort of being stuck in the past, right? I see this all the time in clients. I do a lot of senior downsizing. So I go in and I help seniors move out of their lifelong homes, and I will go in and I will see children's rooms intact, like almost like a museum, and those kids are in their 50s now. And so, you know, you have to think. I had a conversation with a woman the other day whose husband had passed away 9 years ago. And she said, you know, I think I want to have you come over and look at it. There's a lot of stuff I've taken down, and I don't think, but I might need to see it through fresh eyes. Like, I don't want to erase the memory from his life, but I'm not sure. And I said, you know, and she was talking about she feels like she's finally ready to start dating. And what I said is, you know, sometimes, of course, we don't want to scrub someone's memory from your life, but oftentimes having too much of that stuff from the past is keeping us stuck, right? It's almost a complete energetic block. So it's a way to, look, I stole this from Dr. Phil, but I always say the amount of stuff you keep from somebody who's passed away in no way reflects how much you love them. So even if you keep one thing that's treasured versus 100 things, it's about honoring the person's memory. And if the amount of stuff that you're keeping is getting in the way of you living your life, moving forward without them in some respect, that's blocking you. That's a clutter block. That's keeping you stuck in the past. So it's a very delicate balance, but I think that it is, you know, worth looking at. I think it's something that we all have to kind of honor where we're at. So it's interesting. I hope she calls me. She was lovely, and I'd really love to help her kind of move through to the next phase of her life.
All right. How many more clutter blocks do we have?
I think we have two more.
Okay, let's knock them out because we're sitting here, we're going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and we want to know more and more. We're just absorbing this because, you know, we are women and we take notes.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, and I think that's what I'm so excited about this book is that it being so incredibly well received. So we talked about not using our nice stuff. Talked about not using our nice stuff back in the past. Oh, right. And it's, this is an interesting one because it's sentimentality. It's this, it's a very kind of urethral, but it's just this, again, it goes back. I talked about a little bit, not in terms of a block, that it's, we imbue all this meaning. So it's like, my kid touched that rock. You know, my kid painted a favorite thing I see is everybody's, cupboards are full of those coffee mugs from Color Me Mine, you know, and they're like, well, my kid painted it. And I'm like, but it's chipped and you've never used it. And that people are, this is another great example of this sentimentality. I deal with a lot of people after someone has passed away and they have a really hard time letting go of anything with that person's handwriting on it. And what they say is it's like they're dying all over again. Like it's such a personal thing. And so I think that this idea of what we are sentimental about, I think it's something that can hit a tipping point and we can be drowning in, you know, that you don't need every trophy that your kid ever won because, you know, you want to be reminded of their childhood. Look, Dr. Peek, this is what it's really about. It's not that we want the stuff, it's that we want the memories. That's what we want. We want to remember those times in their lives. So what happens when we have too much of that sentimental stuff is we're so afraid of losing the memories. And that's why like smartphones are fantastic. Like take a photo of it. If you know, if you ever want to go back and look at it, you can absolutely do that. So
I love that. You see, I'm a firm believer in the smartphone archived album. I mean, you know, and store it up in the cloud so it never gets lost. So if your smartphone ends up, you know, in the river somewhere, you know that you can always retrieve it very, very easily. But to have those albums is so ridiculously amazing. Plus, you know, what's really cool, too, is that they have these photo frames that are high tech. Mm-hmm. And if you input into them as many photos as you want in one simple frame, the thing keeps automatically rotating. And look at all the space and everything else and decluttering you were able to achieve by doing something as simple as that. I've used that myself, and I find that to be a really smart way to go. You know, here's the
those
other
are fantastic
thing.
And Dr. Peek, you know what else are great too are those photo books that you can get printed up. Like when I do my senior downsizing, we take a bunch of pictures of the house as it was in its state and we make a book. And so then when they go to their senior living or their next place, they have this beautiful book that's very inexpensive to do that they can pull down and look at and get it's the same flood of memories. It's just in a much smaller decluttered aspect. So I agree with you. I think that photos are a fantastic way to keep those memories.
Okay. Now, so you've gone through your clutter purge, right? I think this is a huge problem for people. They sat down, they were able to achieve, you know, they're decluttering. Suddenly their closet looks amazing, whatever. Suddenly, you know, that desk from hell, you know, is now finally not a mountain of, you know, folders and whatever, but things are organized. Now the biggest challenge of all is how do you keep it, you know, going? How do you stop the clutter creep?
Yep.
How do you continuously maintain this newly decluttered kind of life.
I love talking about this, and I will say this is another place where I differ very much from Marie Kondo. She believes that you declutter once and you should never have to do it again. I think of clutter decluttering a bit like dieting, that you have to, you know, we all know the easiest way to keep the weight off is to not gain it back. So, and that's, you know, watching your calories, that's putting on your tennis shoes and walking around the block, that's staying on top of it. And it's the same thing with clutter. It's being very, very conscious of what you buy and what you bring into your house. You know, how much are you shopping? How much are you bringing in? And it's also putting in some markers to know, to know when things are getting out of control. Like, for instance, I always say, don't let your mail go 3 days without dealing with it. For some reason, after 3 days, it gets to be this monstrous pile. So give yourself some markers, like, okay, if my dining room table all of a sudden is covered with the baseball mitt and the sweaters and the homework and the thing I need to return, that's a marker to me that I got to do some decluttering. I also really love to tell people to, just like going to the gym, to, you know, put it in your calendar, like, you know what, Sunday mornings or, you know, Monday night or, you know, on a regular basis, I'm going to spend 15 minutes, you know, putting the house back together. I always say, if you can't neaten up a room in 20 minutes, if you can't get the room back to what it needs to be, the clutter is starting to get control of you. So if you can schedule in some regular maintenance and just to help you stay on top of it, you know, let me take 15 minutes this weekend. Let me take a half an hour this weekend and reorganize my sweaters. Or let me just make sure everything's on the right hangers in my closet so that when Monday morning comes, I can get out the door and go to work. It's something that you've got to constantly maintain, but, you know, a stitch in time saves nine. If you can do it in little chunks, it's just gonna, you know, it's not this giant task. So it's really
okay,
about.
Okay, now speaking of women, hold on now. Speaking of giant tasks.
Hold on.
So now you're looking at your house, your living environment, or your work environment, whatever. And what you see is just a mess, right? You've let this sucker go for a long time. And, you know, you've got the closet from hell. You have, you know, places you haven't visited in a long time in your house, right? So now, now you, right off the bat, you feel overwhelmed, right? And, and then you say to yourself, well, you know, I'll just attack it all right now. And obviously, you and I talking about this just sort of academically know for a fact that you cannot attack it right immediately,
right?
Like that, and make it work. So tell me how you would explain to someone how to tackle this without getting into, you know, all kinds of terrible problems here. Okay. Is it an hour a day? How do you start?
Exactly. So what I like to always tell people is Rome wasn't cluttered in a day. This didn't happen overnight. So give yourself a break and be really realistic about your schedule. I always tell people to start small, like start with your junk drawer in the kitchen or start with your linen closet. Start with, say, a half an hour. Set a timer if you have to. Start with a smaller increment of time and a smaller space. And that's going to do a couple things for you. One, you're going to be able to accomplish it, right? You're going to be able to get it done. You're going to really quickly be able to reap the rewards of what it feels like, and you're going to be successful. You know, it's like they say, make your bed every morning, because you start your day off with your first task, being successful at your first task. So it's like, be successful at your first decluttering test. Don't start with the letters from your dead mother. Like, don't start with the really hard stuff. You know, pick a category. For instance, if magazines are easy for you to let go of, you know, get rid of all the magazines. Pick something that's successful. See how that first one went. See how that first session that you committed to, you scheduled, you did, went. And then maybe the next time you schedule an hour, and maybe the next, you know, and you just give yourself a realistic calendar And then also maybe in the middle of that process, you're going to realize, you know what, I need some help. I need a friend that can come over. You know, I need, you know, a grown kid. Maybe I need to hire somebody. Sometimes we need help. And so I think that if you pull your whole, you know, what I don't want everyone to do is pull their whole house apart, stack it all over the house, and then you're worse where you started. Start small and you will pick up steam. If it works for you, you're going to, you know, you're going to get jazzed. You're going to be like, this is great. I could do this. All right, let me take the next thing. So I really want people to be successful at it. And so I say, you know, just again, start small, schedule the time in, and set a timer.
Absolutely. And I think that the very last message here, right, is something that it was something that you said that just sort of stuck in my brain. And what you said was, you said, well, some people are just born organized, you know. Well, you know, all the rest of us can't stand you because you, know, you seem to have it easier. You know, you look at something and you go, oh, okay. I mean, I literally knew I had a hairdresser once who every single day would go home. I mean, she just told me this like it was a natural thing. She goes, well, you know, I go home and she takes everything out of her purse, reorganizes it. You know, because, you know, you throw stuff into your purse, you got receipts everywhere and, you know, the usual. And she reorganizes it and puts it into a purse that's going to work for her the next day. I mean, hello. She's one of those people who, you know, and she's always dressed impeccably. And she's, you know, seems to, I look at her workstation at the salon. I mean, it just couldn't be more organized if it tried. And she knows the minute someone messes with one of her brushes, you know what I'm saying? Now, she's not crazy or anything. She's just like, you know, uber organized. So I want everyone out there not to feel bad if they weren't born that way, because I really think there is something going on in what we call the prefrontal cortex of the brain. That's where you really organize things in a big way. So just simply do the best you can. And you've just heard so many amazing little tips and techniques and tools to be able to help you on your way to decluttering, because I'm an absolute declutter fanatic. I love it because I really see the return on investment. It works. It absolutely works, hands down. So, Tracy, I can't begin to thank you enough for being on the Her podcast.
I love it. Thank you, Dr. Peek, for having me. And I agree with you 100%. I just want people to know, like, if you aren't born this way, don't beat yourself up. Understand that it can also be a learned trait. So go easy on yourself. We're so hard on ourselves.
I know. Well, we're women, so that's sort of inbred. If you own a pair of ovaries, trust me, this is the way it goes. Everyone out there, we have been talking to Tracy McCubbin. She's the author of Making Space Clutter-Free, the last book on decluttering you'll ever need. Run on over to her website, which is Tracy McCubbin. That's TRACYM, as in Mary, CCUBBIN.com. Also know that she has a Facebook as well. So you want to run on over to her social media, have a little look at her. And that is, this is Tracy McCubbin. And her Twitter is @Tracy_McCubbin. And we thank you so much again. And everyone out there right now, you've heard this decluttering episode, so take a minute to hit iTunes and rate and review the show, because I want to hear from you, because I know this really, oh, I could hear you writing all those little notes out there, so you know this resonated with you. Yeah, I know about these things. Why? Because I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Her Podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek, or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every episode of the Her Podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today, and stay well.